Good evening.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Village Board meeting. Would you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Welcome, everyone, to our Village Board meeting this evening, and a special welcome to our young Boy Scout here on official business. Thanks for being here. We'll call our meeting to order. Roll call, Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrich.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter here. Trustee Dart is excused. Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Sampson.
Here.
Okay, do I have a motion? Well, we had an addition to the agenda. Action removal or approval of the Doty School STRS State Municipal Agreement. We'll move that up to item 10B or 10A. And are there any other modifications to the agenda? Hearing none, I'll accept a proposal or a motion to accept the agenda as amended.
Move to approve as amended.
Thank you. Seconded by Trustee Genrich.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Announcements. Mr. Kevin Wieland, who is our building inspector and cross-connection inspector, left for a short while to explore other opportunities and has chosen or has realized that there's no better place to work in the world than the Village of Alloway. And so he's returned, and we're very delighted to have him back. Winter Luminary Walk at the Hill on January 19th from 5 to 8 p.m. There is an item on the Heritage Hill website regarding this, heritagehillgb.org. But basically, it's going to be a great night, a lit night at Heritage Hill. And it says, take advantage of the first ever opportunity to visit the hill, illuminated at night, with access into many of the historic buildings available where interpretation and demonstrations and activities will be taking place. Examples are Fur Trade Cabin, Blacksmith Shop, Officer Quarters for candle dipping, and the farmhouse for cooking. So it'll be a great night for all. You can go to the Heritage Hill website and register for the event. It's $7 for people the age of 3 and up, and 2 and under are free. Cabin Fever Cookout at St. Matt's Catholic Church on January 26th from 4 to 8 p.m. I know it is a fundraiser for the Athletic Booster Club. Does anyone have any other information on the event?
Just being in charge of it a couple of times, it's a fun event.
Good. So it's a cookout.
Yep.
Inside?
Well, we grill the burgers outside because otherwise it would fill up the church with smoke.
Okay.
I'm teasing you. Yeah, it's all inside in the gathering space. So,
okay.
And I forgot what the price points are, but it's like a burger and a bag of chips and a soda for like $5.
Great. So that is January 26th from 4 to 8 p.m. at St. Matt's Church on Webster Avenue. The Do Try Run Charities. Sarugi's Valentine Run on February 9th. It's a recurring event. It is, if you are interested in running, it's either a 5K run or a 15K run. The 15K run is to support it's called the TRIPS program of St. Norbert's. TRIPS stands for Turning Responsibility into Powerful Service. So it supports the student's alternate break service program. You can Google Sarugi's Valentine Run 2019 for more information. And are there any other announcements from the board? Any other announcements from staff? Hearing none, we'll move on to item number 4, public appearances. Is there anyone in the audience this evening who would like to speak on something that is not on this evening's agenda? Sir, come on up. Good evening. Hello.
Good evening. I'm Gina Benz.
I'm Joe Benz.
Thank you. Could you give us your address, please?
437 Simonette Street.
Thank you.
And we wanted to have the opportunity to speak with you tonight just to get some clarification on an ordinance that we've just recently become aware of. We've owned our home at 437 Simonette Street for over 22 years and lived there the whole time. So this is the first time that we've heard about an ordinance prohibiting the storage or the parking of your fishing boat.
14-foot fishing boat, aluminum boat, doesn't have a motor or anything.
Okay.
So we received, I guess it was over, kind of over the Christmas holiday, we received a letter in the mail informing us that that was in violation of the ordinance and that we needed to take action within 7 days to rectify the situation. And, well, it's just kind of, you know, we kind of didn't really exactly know what to do, because what do you do at this time of the year to kind of make arrangements? I guess one thing, we're kind of just curious about the reason for the ordinance.
Yeah, I called up Mike Laudner and I asked him, I said, what is even the reason for this ordinance? And he had no answer for that. He said because the person that was here before him 5 or 6 years ago would have passed this ordinance, and he couldn't give me a reason why. And there's also an exemption for pop-up campers up to 20 feet in length. They may be parked in your yard, but I don't understand why a 20-foot pop-up camper is okay, but not a 14-foot boat, which I might use between November 15th and March 1st, because, you know, the walleye fishing on the Fox River and that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. I'd like maybe like that explain why the pop-up camper is okay, but the 14-foot boat is not. Okay. And we'd also like to mention that we do have a 6-foot privacy fence around our yard. So basically, we took pictures of what. In order to see this boat, you have to look between the slats here. So it's, I don't see how it could possibly be bothering anyone.
Okay.
Well, I guess we're kind of wondering too if, you know, if there's a possibility of kind of being sort of grandfathered in. Like I said, we've lived there, you know, we've had the whole time we've lived there, the whole 22 years, we've had a boat parked in that very location. So, you know, it just seems like it was kind of sprung.
And this ordinance, or this code was passed, I asked Mike Lauder, and it was 2012, and so we're just first hearing about it now. And 2012 was about when our kids were getting their vehicles. If we had known that we were going to have to give up one of our garage stall spots, maybe we would have thought differently about having the kids get a vehicle, because,
yeah,
you know, people are leaving at different times in the morning. And
we've got a two-car garage, and right now we have 5 vehicles between them. We have 2
college students are both home right now.
And their vehicles, so, you know, we probably wouldn't have, you know, we would have had to limit the number of cars a little bit more if we knew that we had to park, you know, give up a parking spot in our garage for, you know, just for this little fishing boat to be there half the year. So.
And I don't mean to seem petty by saying this, but my daughter and I went to Menards today. We were coming back the same way we always come back, Woodview Lane over to Simonette Street. And I saw a boat parked in the 14-foot boat parked in the backyard.
Yeah, I just think,
so, I mean,
there's,
I think there's a lot of them that
you know do park their boats back there, and I guess, you know, what is the harm? It's out of view. It's out of all of our neighbors' view. It's out of the street view. So I guess I'll give you the opportunity to respond to all those questions and comments.
Okay. Well, during this part of the meeting, we can't make any decisions or anything because it's not on the agenda.
Okay.
But what we can do is, if the board has any questions, we can certainly ask that, and then we can talk to staff and learn more, potentially get that on a future agenda, to look at your case. When we look at individual cases, we have to look at the entire ordinance because, as you mentioned, there are other people with those. So we have to take a look at why the ordinance, well, the ordinance is in place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So are there options to make a change? Are there reasons to make a change? That sort of thing. And we'd be happy to do that. Brad, do you have any comments on it?
We can speak a little bit.
Yes.
And trying to think back to what all the rationale was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't in this position, so I guess I didn't pay attention enough at that time. But could certainly go back through some of the minutes and see if we can find whatever, what the discussions were, where the limitations were drawn, were things like this discussed, or considered,
mm-hmm.
so we can put all that stuff together and bring it back in.
Sure. You know, you make the best decision you can at the time you have the information, and
sure.
if it continues to be so, it continues to be so. But
I guess my biggest thing is I just don't. Can someone explain to me why a 20-foot pop-up, which sits pretty much as the boat may be a little higher, the boat might be up here, but the pop-up is right here.
Yeah.
It's 20-foot minus 16 with a trailer on it. I don't understand why they made the differentiation. Maybe, no, I don't know, maybe someone here has an answer for that. I don't know. I mean, does that make sense to anyone here?
Perfect. No. But I remember discussions, you know, and seasonal is always kind of, I don't know how much time we spent on the plan commission on the trailer ordinance, and is it a utility trailer, is it a boat trailer, is it a camper, is it whatever. And there's a seasonal kind of a thing, but in my mind, a boat and a camper would be roughly the same season, although, like you mentioned, maybe the boat might even have a little broader use. And it has to be stored on a hard surface. Now, given this, was there a complaint?
Yeah, how do we know it was there?
Yeah, because otherwise, how would you even know it's in there?
I really don't know.
I guess that's one
you
of the things.
If you come from the right angle, there's a board on one side and a board on the other side, and there's 2x4 that goes between them. So if you come at the right angle and you look like this, you'll see it for maybe a split second. But if you're face on, you won't see it at all. So that's all I can think of.
And it's on your patio or something?
It's
like
in
that?
The backyard. It's just I got some patio pavers down underneath the tires is all.
Okay.
But it's just such a hassle, especially for her. And she hates scraping windows in the morning, you know. And I'm sure we all do.
Yeah.
And it seems like kind of a waste to put a nice vehicle outside and put your old fishing boat inside, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of these storages, you know, like I used to work for Brown County Fairgrounds, and they store boats there.
Yep.
You can't have access to them once you put them in.
Right.
You know, it's like 4 months without access. So if you're not, you really, your only choice is the garage, I guess, if you want to use your boat.
Yeah, or other temporary storage facilities.
Yeah, that's the only one. That's the one I know about. So I can't. I don't know if they're all how they work.
Okay. Well,
question.
Yes.
So where does it stand now? You got notification that this ordinance exists. You didn't mm-hmm. get a formal warning or a ticket.
Not a ticket yet. No.
Okay.
But I will get a ticket in the next 7 days if I don't move it.
Okay. And I heard you say grandfathered, permanent or. Understanding that it would be might be hard to find a place to put it to rent a you know rent
well,
a spot this time of year.
Yeah, but I would really like to. I'd like to know why the like this gentleman said. I'd like to know the difference between a pop-up camper and a 14-foot fishing boat because to me they're roughly very equivalent. I mean, I could see it if it's a 20-foot yacht or something, but a 14-foot aluminum fishing boat that you can pull around. I don't see how that hurts anybody in the backyard. I really don't. And I think if you look in Alloway, you will find more than just mine because I know there's another one on Woodview or Wood Lane.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that doesn't make it right.
No, but so. It just makes it select. You know, if you're going to enforce mine, I want you to enforce the others too.
I completely agree.
But great questions. But for us to take a look at it, and it can't be considered. You know, well, now it's now 2 weeks out or 3 weeks out till our next meeting. And if we really do a comprehensive dig down into this, it's going to take time.
Right.
Meanwhile, you're sitting there. So
So I'm just wondering if we, you know, because this is something that's, you know, kind of on the table now and up for discussion, and, you know, we're looking for answers, can it just be sort of, sort of let it ride until we get a resolution, like perhaps at the next meeting?
We will turn that over to Mr. Lang, and I think I don't see an issue with that. You have taken action. You're addressing it. You're asking good questions. So
thank you.
Okay.
So do we need to come to the next board meeting then, or will you just let us know what your decision is?
Stay in communication.
Yes, I'll write that.
Brad will take good care of you.
Thank you for your time.
Do his. Well, thanks for coming. You know, you never know until you know. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not a lawbreaker, a rule breaker. Anybody that asks me will say, if anything, he follows the rules too closely. But this one really makes no sense to me. I mean,
Thank you.
Well, you're asking good questions.
And thank you.
We thank you for taking the time to do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Here's a, would you like your picture back? Yeah, do you want your pictures back? You know, you can only have one car in the driveway.
I'm in real trouble then.
We have a picture now.
We're in trouble then.
And why aren't you scraping her windows for her in the morning?
I will be. So
now it's our turn. Now it's our turn for the questions. I'm teasing you.
Okay. Sir, in the back, you'd like to come on up? Okay.
Oh. Mike's busy.
First of all, my name is Dale Walton, and this is my wife, Janet.
Dale.
We live on 138 Iroquois.
Okay, thank you.
Well, what we have here, well, we have extra copies if anybody wants one of these, but here's what we wrote out before we came tonight, because we didn't know we were even coming tonight until Mike visited our house. But we have a camper in the yard, which when we moved there, we distinctly asked if this was going to be a problem. This is almost 12 years ago. And we asked if there was going to be a problem. We talked to the person that was Mike that's in charge of it as he comes around. Mike, we just talked to him. Mm-hmm.
Mike who stopped in today.
Yeah. And so we had talked to him. I mean, not to him, but to whoever was in his position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 12 years ago.
Right.
And we told him our situation. He said, well, it has to be on a slab and stuff like that. So when we bought the place over on 138 Iroquois, we made the driveway that much wider and paid the extra money to have the skirt put in and everything else so that we could, because we knew we were going to park our camper there. You know.
Okay.
So that's where we park our camper when we're not using it, but we use our camper he says, as long as you're not going to be using your camper 9 months out of the year or something like that, we're off and on. We use our camper 5 months off and on, and we're gone 3 months in the winter. We're snowbirds.
Congratulations.
We worked a long time to retire. We decided to retire in Holloway.
Thank
but
you.
We did check with the people here in this building, and they said, the gentleman that was in charge at that time, he said, no problem. Okay, so we went ahead and bought the place, made the driveway, did all this, all the blah, 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 okay? So, but here's our situation. We'd love to be out of here before Christmas, but we can't. We got to stay till after Christmas because of family. Okay, this time around we ran into difficulty with health problems in the family. We ran across everything was being delayed about a good month. Otherwise, we'd normally be out of here in December. What we're asking, because we see a lot of campers and a lot of, you know, but we never see any complaints. So we don't know what, if there is any, even if there is any. If there's a complaint, no problem. We'd be out of there anyway. We wouldn't want to be a sore eye to anybody. We got a camper that's only 2 years old. It's a new one, you know. So, but anyway, what we're asking if this could get looked at and change, and could some of these people have be grandfathered in because. It is something that we didn't ask. It's the first time we were addressed on this as well.
Okay.
You know, so we're kind of like in the same situation, but only we got a bigger camper, but for a shorter period of time we're here.
So how big is your camper?
It's a 30 footer.
So it's in your front, on your side drive.
It's on the side of the garage.
Okay.
You can see it from the road.
clearly a third of the bell. But we know nobody in the neighborhood has a problem with it. There's about three more campers in the neighborhood as well. Mm-hmm. And they keep theirs there all winter. They wrap them all up and they just keep them there. But, you know, every time I see a camper or a boat or anything in anybody's yard, I see it well kept. I see the yard well kept. I don't see any sore eye whatsoever. You know, that's my point of view. But I would be asking to change this rule because, for one thing, Alloway is the only one that has it. Green Bay don't have it. Bellevue don't have it. Ashwaubenon don't have it. De Pere don't have it. None of them have this rule. The only one that has this rule is Alloway and Wrightstown. And Wrightstown doesn't enforce it.
So then they shouldn't have it.
Huh?
Then they shouldn't have it.
I don't think we should either. But we do. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't have been here otherwise. If we wouldn't have, Mike wouldn't have came up to our door and was wondering why we weren't gone already.
So when you go south, do you bring your camper with you?
Definitely. that's what we live in. Okay. We travel with that. So, okay. And then every time we go on any vacation, our camper comes with us.
Okay.
So it's fully loaded, but it is a hassle because like the gentleman said before, and you can't put it in the fairgrounds because you don't get it till April. There goes our snow burning.
Right.
Can't get it. Put it anyplace else, it gets snowed in. It's almost another impossible. And in order to for the batteries to not be wore out, you got to take the whole battery bank out. We got kind of a large battery bank in there, so we plug it in and keep it all charged up for whenever time we don't take our battery bank out. Okay. But we'd have to do that. It would be a hassle to try to find a place to park that thing for a month, because that's about the only time we'd be. Where really quality, you know, I think the rule, what is the rule? The rule is to, you have to have it out the middle of November, and you can't bring it back till the middle of April. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're gone anyway, so. we don't worry about it. We're gone. We don't worry about Alloway while we're in Florida. But so that's kind of like what we're kind of asking here, and we I don't know if this can get on the agenda now with them here and with us here, if we can get that rolling and you guys talk about this thing a little bit. But right now, Mike's letting us keep ours there because
we're going to leave.
I've been gone by now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think you can leave until we get this resolved.
Sorry.
And it takes a long time.
No problem. I'll just close down the government.
we're keeping ours open.
So anyway, I don't know if anybody would want a copy of this or that. You know.
Copy of?
Well, kind of like what we're asking.
Sure.
Know. And then I don't know, maybe you can re-look at it, you know. No.
Thank you.
Come prepared.
I see that.
Because I know you're not going to remember everything we just told you word for word. No. But I'm sure you're capable of remembering all this stuff.
I walk my dog past your camper every day, or at least once there.
How's it look?
Yeah, it's a good looking camper, and you got those cedars, so at least from one angle it's straight.
One thing, the McCormick home don't see it at all. Hmm? McCormick home doesn't see it at all.
Okay.
But,
it's just bad timing when you're snowbirding because it's just the time.
We ran into a situation because we told Mike that we'll probably, as soon as Christmas is over, you're not going to see us there.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be gone. I told him today, I said, no, for sure, if you see us here at the end of this month, come and check. We might be in here dead. I'm out of here. I don't like this winter. This is why we retired. So if we can get you guys to talk about that, and I'm requesting that rule is if it's not necessary anyplace else. Why is it necessary here? And unless there's complaints, mm-hmm. We had a complaint in our neighbor. Let's say. Jim lives in our neighborhood. He had a complaint about it.
I think it was him.
Don't worry, Jim. I'll have it out of there tomorrow.
It really was Jim.
I'll take it someplace.
I see it every day.
Was it Jim that complained? Okay.
But anyway, that's what I'm saying. There's really no, I don't see anybody complaining. You know. I see nothing but nice yards.
Yep.
Okay?
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Enjoy the warmth wherever you go. And we'll talk about it.
And next year, if this works out good, we'll take you all with us.
Okay. Bribery.
It's bribery.
Bribery.
It works.
It works.
Thanks again, folks. Thanks for coming. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to speak on something that is not on this evening's agenda?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm the former co-chairman of the Village of Alloway Bike Ped Committee. Last year was discovered that Old Chapel Hill Apartment Plan Development District isn't in compliance with the village ordinance on parking. It's funny that they mentioned parking of trailers, but it's my understanding that the apartment complex is supposed to have two legal parking stalls per unit. Is that right, Trevor? Two stalls per unit.
You can adjust the board.
And it's my understanding that they were built with about 50 parking stalls, which is about half of what they were allowed. And somehow they were allowed to redefine what a parking legal parking stall is, and now they have tandem parking stalls. There's not enough parking there, and as a result of the shortage of parking, the Village of Alloway is now going to have to spend an extra $700,000 reconfiguring West St. Joseph Street to allow parking for the unlawful parking that's going on right now over at the Old Chapel Hill apartment complex. So tonight I'd like to ask the village board to send over the code enforcement officer to find out if indeed they are parking illegally there. And if they are parking illegally, they need to do something about it, and it shouldn't be on the village's dime. I've been following this for 2.5 years. Jim Rafter gave a presentation on behalf of the Public Works Department at St. Matthew's Parish on the 15-year capital improvement plan, and I spotted mistakes there, and one of the mistakes was the planned Arboretum Trail and this old, this village, this Chapel Hill property, and I was raked over the coals. I was ridiculed for 3 meetings straight by Mr. Rafter, and the village spent the attorney's fees on stopping me from talking about it, and now the chickens have come home to roost. The village is going to spend $700,000 narrowing the street to allow a handful of parking spots when in reality the property should have been properly designed, and the meetings with the developer should not have been held in private meetings simply because you were using TIF money to fund it. So, again, I'm asking the village board here to send over the code enforcement officer tomorrow to make sure that they are parking legally there, and if they're not parking legally, they need to come up with a solution that isn't going to take $700,000 out of the village taxpayers' money. And in addition, out of that $700,000 that the village is going to have to pay, it's going to come out of the TIF district, which the bulk comes out of the school funding. So we're going to have to do some bonding on it. And there was a lot of shifting around of funding priorities in the last 12 months there. But that project, the West St. Joseph project, had been $200,000 for several years, and then all of a sudden it went up to $400,000. Now it's over $900,000. That's $700,000 in a mistake on a PDD that should have been caught 2.5 years ago when Jim Rafter gave his presentations on the Public Works Capital Improvement Plan. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak tonight on something that's not on the agenda? Hearing none, we'll close the public appearance. And just for the board's clarification, Mr. O'Rourke came to the Public Works meeting last week and said much the same thing about a project going from 200,000 to 700,000. And Sean Game, our Department of Public Works director, corrected him and let him know that it was actually probably going to be a $400,000 project. But there were multiple line items, to which Jim replied, well, it was hard to understand. And then the difference between the project back then and the project now is that it was a resurfacing project, and now it's a complete reconstruction project. So for your information, that's how that has changed.
And I would like to add to that that the parking issue at the Old Chapel Hills is a totally separate issue than the road reconstruct. And the road reconstruct is not happening because of parking shortages at the alleged parking shortages at the apartment complex.
Yep. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, just wanted to clarify the they have 50 surface parking stalls, but then they have also 48 garages tied to each. So there's in total 98 stalls, which brings in compliance.
So it is in compliance.
It's lawful.
Okay.
But they're not legal spaces. Not
so legal. So that's the clarification. Moving on. Action item number 5, police service contract. Mr. Lynn.
So at the last meeting we were discussing the contract in the memorandum of understanding. Excuse me, that we were waiting on from the county corporate counsel. You did look at it in December, I believe. January now, right? So we looked at it in December, and we wanted to make sure our attorney reviewed it. Julie and I sat down with you a few times, several times, and Attorney Gass did come up with what I put in front of you was on the second page, some changes to the clarification, and then Julie crafted some additional changes to that. We sent that back to Attorney Gass. He's fine with these changes. Basically, what we're trying to do is make sure we're protecting the village in the event the state is able to reimburse for the investigative services. So the language that Julie came up with really spelled it out in detail, the percentages that we'd be looking at during based on the cases from 2015 through 2017, just to really make it more airtight. Attorney Gass is willing to pursue this further with the Brown County Corporate Council to mesh the two agreements together. We wanted to bring it here first to make sure that what has been put in front of you is okay with you.
When you say to mesh the two agreements, what are you referring to?
If you look at page 1, is the entire agreement, the entire memorandum of understanding.
Yep.
So then it would be changing the clarification.
Okay.
Make sure Brown County Corporate Council is fine with these. I don't see why they don't just to make sure. Then I would like to point out that Friday, I believe, it was Friday. We had a phone conversation with Senator Cole's office, Jason from Senator Cole's office, and he's pretty confident that this pickup, this expense that's been put on the shoulders of the Village of Alloway, will be taken care of, whether it's through state legislation and or budget or both. And that's why we wanted to make sure that was put in the language as well.
In your letter, it says 38% of our total cases assigned to the village between 2015 and 17. Are we looking to recoup costs from 2015 through 2017?
Those, because 2015 through 2017 were based on 2012 through 2015.
Okay.
So,
but are we looking
in the rear? Whether the state. The contract won't have anything to do with what the state is able to do. But yeah, we're certainly hoping that we can get some of that as well. Okay. Because we do have the data. We know what the percent of calls and the cost associated with those.
Okay.
So if for the contract, we would be looking at approximately $65,000 reduction in our contract for 2019, $75,000 for 2020, and $85,000 for 2021.
Which is the amount that it's actually going up, right?
For the most part.
Right, with the increased amount of investigators, keeping that percentage of cases assigned to GVCI, that's how it would increase in terms of what we would have in the contract.
So we're heading in the right direction. As far as the motion, I think motion in order to send us back to Attorney Gass to work with Brown County Corporate Counsel.
And then a final one would come back to the board.
Final one would come back.
Okay. Do I have said motion? Trustee Harris?
If you need me to repeat, I can. Otherwise, the way Brad described, we direct staff to continue the staff and village attorney to continue the creation of the Memorandum of Understanding regarding the police contract.
Thank you. Seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion?
Bless you.
Bless you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 6, discussion regarding reconstruction of St. Joseph Street proposed roadway widths. Hello, Sean.
Well, the purpose of this agenda item tonight is to gain final approval of the St. Joseph Street proposed roadway width. We have completed enough design to determine the impacts and costs associated with the narrower multimodal roadway. The new recommended roadway includes two 12-foot lanes in each direction, bike accommodations on each side, within the street, parking at the old Chapel Hill apartment, 2-foot curb and gutter on each side, a terrace, 7-foot sidewalk on the north side, and a 5-foot walk on the south side. We have determined estimated cost for this proposed roadway section at $1 to $1.1 million. The cost to build a sidewalk is estimated at $140,000 to $160,000. Originally, we had when we had come up with the cost for this project, it was based on a wider roadway. Right now, the roadway is 45 feet from back of curb to back of curb. By narrowing the roadway, we can save, roughly speaking, $50,000. So the total cost for this project really hasn't increased a whole lot. Maybe $100,000. We'll find out when we bid this. We're going to continue to refine these cost estimates as the design progresses. With the hopes that the costs come down. What I need tonight is a motion from this village board to approve the final this final roadway section so that we can stay on track and we can finish the plans.
Okay. Any questions for Sean?
Would include a sidewalk on both sides, Riverside to Webster.
So on the
yes, sidewalk on both sides from okay. Riverside to Webster. 7 foot on the north side, 5 foot on the south side.
Any other questions? I'll accept the motion on this item. Trustee Genrich.
I move to approve as presented.
Thank you. Seconded by Trustee Green. Any discussion? Yes.
I just wanted to also point out that when the TIF district was created, projects are identified. West St. Joseph is one of those projects that was identified in the estimated cost back in 2012 was $800,000. The number that was presented at St. Matt's
again, it was going back to just a resurfacing, which is my guess, because there's no way you were going to do the street for $200,000 or $400,000.
Yeah. Okay. Just one other comment. I don't know if there's a question in here, but at one point a couple weeks ago, some of us, I did, got a question from a constituent about the safety of the road diet, of narrowing it. And I think what I've seen, went in and saw the minutes from the subcommittee, and also I think heard from you, the safety issue has been addressed and studied, and which is totally appropriate. Based on traffic loads and patterns.
Yes. You know, this is, there really isn't a whole lot of traffic on St. Joseph Street. It's a collector. Roughly speaking, there's 300,000 vehicles a day that use St. Joseph Street.
300,000?
3,000.
We need 8 lanes.
This proposed section matches what we have on Libel Street. On Libel Street, we have 2 12-foot lanes, 4-foot bike accommodations, curb and gutter, and sidewalk on one side. Libel Street carries 10 to 13,000 vehicles a day. On Hoffman, we have a similar section.
I thought it was a fair question, too, because then we're looking at apartments and condos going in that might relate to St. Joseph's. But even with that, what you're describing with these other streets, it wouldn't boost traffic up to Libel levels or half of that.
This will easily accommodate the traffic that is on St. Joseph Street.
In the future.
And into the future, too.
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
I just wanted to double check. I don't remember what you said, Sean. What will the road be from back curb to back to curb?
It will be...
we got 12 and 4 and...
37 from back to curb to back.
37. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Well, let me make sure here. I don't want to mislead anybody.
Excellent.
36. With a half a foot on the curb, 37, right? 37 from back to curb to back to curb. Oh, 4, 16, 36, sorry. 36.
Okay. Thank you. So we're not even, we're more than 10% away from that ordinance minimum of 33. So we're even above that.
Right.
That's what I wanted to make sure of. We're, you know, larger than even our ordinance states it needs to be.
Yep. In that particular case, that ordinance is more geared, that requirement is more geared to a local roadway?
Or a resident.
Neighborhood.
Okay.
Roadway.
Understood. Thank you.
And then at the December Public Works meeting, we had a bunch of residents from the condos there and the St. Joseph Street condos. And they were all, they all listened, they had great questions, and so they were included in the process. Okay, we have a motion to approve and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 7, action regarding resolution 2019-01, thanking one Mr. Mike Sleeman for his years of service as a Village of Alloway Water Department employee. Do I have a motion on this item?
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion made by Trustee Green, seconded by Trustee Sampson. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Mike, would you be kind enough to come up to the podium, please?
And your son can come up too, if you're sure. What's your name?
John.
John, thank you for being here. We have a resolution here, resolution 2019-01, the first of the year. Village of Alloway. Be it resolved by the Village Board of the Village of Alloway, County of Brown, State of Wisconsin, that the Alloway Village Board wishes to thank Mike Sleeman
for his 20 years of dedicated service as a water department employee with the Village of Alloway, and to honor Mr. Sleeman with a resolution in recognition of his excellent service to our community. Passed and approved by the Village Board of the Village of Alloway this 15th day of January 2019. Congratulations, Mike. Thank you very much for everything you've done for our village. We're better for having you here.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Future Village of Alloway employee, right?
Maybe.
Take water.
Item number 8, action regarding village park and facility naming policy. Mr. Clark.
Yes. Excuse me. This is a proposed policy that we've been working with the Park and Rec Committee on for the last few months. The policy is for naming right or naming of any village parkland or facility or any part of a park. Kind of came to us when we were working with some of our youth sports organizations, the Alloway Buccaneers organization, looking for ways to utilize naming rights or other revenue generating options to help offset costs associated with park improvements. With the Alloway Buccaneers, if you recall, it was their contribution for building the concession stand in Webster Park. We've also worked for years with the Miracle League of Green Bay in the development of Optimus Park, with the majority of that development coming from their funding. And through that, they have also utilized some naming or giving people credit for the donations that they've given to the village. We never really had a true policy with regards to, you know, the naming of, you know, things like that, or even the naming of any of our parks. And we wanted to get a policy put in place so that it's kind of fair across the board, and you know, we know what processes we need to go through as we, you know, work with different organizations or different people in the future. With that, you know, there's a copy of draft the proposal, or the, I'm sorry, the policy included, as well as some guidelines, some rough guidelines with regards to some sponsorship dollars, years that would be allowed for, say, a naming of a facility or a sport field, things like that. And those are just starting points. Those are not hard set in stone. What we would look at is working with an entity or an organization or an individual and come up with something that works for both them and the village. And then, you know, finally, ultimately, the village board would have final say, meaning that we bring it back to the board for final approval with an agreement put in place.
Okay. I've got a couple of questions, Chris.
Sure.
On the first page, at the bottom, the third bullet, it says all previously named facilities should be rolled into a policy once the timeline for that item has been reached per the guidelines in that policy. And then later on, I thought I read that existing facilities would be grandfathered.
That is correct. In creating the draft policy, the grandfathering of the existing facilities was put into the policy. The bullet point that you read was a recommendation from one of the park committee individuals on the committee of a potential change. That was one of the items that I wanted the board to clarify on, so we knew which direction we want to go with that. Do we want to grandfather those that have already been put into place, or do we want to make sure that those that are put in place once you know, a time period comes in, we go back to them and say, okay, you know, this is the policy. You know, now we're asking that you, if you want to continue to have a name on something, you know, now, you know, can you donate again?
So right now, I'm guessing there's two parks that would fall into that, and that would be Optimus and Kiwanis, maybe?
Webster Park, because that's Patrick Henry Martin, Webster Park. And in Optimus Park, there are several facilities or park, different things within the park that have naming on them already through the Miracle League, such as the shade structure that goes over the bleachers. Much of the playground has different things that has naming associated with that. So there's various items out there that are currently do have names on them.
Are there contractual obligations with those?
That I'm not sure of. I don't believe so. I don't believe there was any written contract that was associated with any of that.
Another example would be the benches that are named in memory of along the trail.
The only obligation that I can recall, it dates back quite a few years ago when the Girls Little League was looking for putting scoreboards up, and Pepsi was willing to sponsor those, and the obligation was then the Girls Little League would exclusively sell Pepsi products for a given period of time. That's the only one I can recall.
And is that still in effect? Or?
I don't think so, because it's been probably 10, 15 years.
And then on page 2 of 4, under procedure, we say citizen comments and recommendations must be in writing. Oh, this is when it goes, when you're asking for a name change, it needs to, requests or comments need to be in writing. Is there a reason people couldn't come to a public hearing and give their comments?
No, I don't believe there would be any reason, you know, that they couldn't. You know, I think the in writing portion would be so that we have, you know, kind of a paper trail to go along with that.
Okay. So if they came to a public hearing, they could always, we'd have forms available.
Sure.
And allow them to do that. Under qualifying names, it says at the time new parkland or facility is acquired, the Director of Parks, Recreation, Forestry will assign a temporary name to the location. And then we show the list of 6 different ways that you can be named. E and F, an individual or group that has been contributed significantly to the acquisition can be named. An individual or a group that has provided exceptional service. I wouldn't think that we would want to assign a temporary name under those conditions, because you're making some kind of a promise that temporarily we're going to name it John Smith Park.
Sure.
And then it's up to the village board to actually make that, and the board would actually be kind of then not coerced, but feel an obligation to name it the same.
Right. It may be a slight misunderstanding in the word verbiage there. The temporary name would be, for instance, if we needed to have a name on a piece of property for grant purposes, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to assign something to it
right
when filling out paperwork. Would not be associated with anything with those individuals. That would come following, you know, the development than any of the permanent namings. So an example would be, you know, if we had a park along Libel Street out here, we would call it Libel Park.
Yep.
Just so we could utilize that as that's the location for this. Following, you know, any of the development, then we would, you know, work with the individual, the group, whomever, to come up with that final official name that would come to the village board for approval.
Okay. I would just recommend then below that statement, when you go into park and rec areas, facilities may be named. I would say permanent names being assigned to a park would fall under the following conditions. And under renaming, you have the conditions on page 2, under renaming, paragraph 6D. You say, in order for a park or facility to be considered for renaming, the following must occur. 1, the recommended name must qualify according to section 5. And 2, be accompanied by a petition from the particular park or facility users. I would add number 3, if village staff or parks committee submits a recommendation, or if the village board identifies a need. Because otherwise, the way I read it, we couldn't change it ourselves. On page 3 of 4, paragraph 8, other naming alternatives. We go through them, and then I would go over to, or let's go to D on the very bottom. These names will be recommended to the Parks, Rec, and Forestry Committee for final approval. But you said earlier that the village board will have final approval.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say for approval, and then add, if such approval is received, the Parks Committee will recommend to the Village Board for final approval. And then this is a MIT. But in paragraph 9C, under use of signage, plaques, and markers, it says park and rec site naming signage should be of monument style, located at a prominent entrance to the property. Such signage design and size shall adhere to the village sign codes. I said in design standards, but because we have nice signs that we want to. I'm done.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I've got a minute of my own. It's small. It's actually a question, and it's on page 104 under the very first paragraph, scope. And that second sentence, also it would give suitable recognition to individuals. Now that, just so I'm clear, it could be individuals, it could be foundations, it could be corporate, right?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe I would swap out the word individuals and make it those, give suitable recognition to those who can't do such and such. And then in the very first sentence, typo recreation sites should probably be S-I-T-E-S.
Where is that in?
The very first sentence under scope.
Ah. Good catch.
Looks good.
Rob, didn't you review this at committee?
Trustee Harris.
Quick comment about the grandfather, because that was one of my questions. And just in terms of some guidance, at least off the top of my head, I would think that if the established areas that we have, if we, in the history of the village, named something in honor of a person, it would stay. If someone had given a strong financial contribution to get something built or established, that would stay. We're doing this for future developments. So in those instances, like I said, with honoring someone, they already helped donate, whether it's the benches, whether it's some sort of structure. My initial reaction to this for grandfathering is to leave them as is. I don't know how the rest of the board feels about that.
I would agree. And we don't have, doesn't sound like we have any contracts with anyone over naming rights of the parks. So when Optimus Park was named, why did we call it Optimus? I think there's one person in this room who probably knows the answer to that.
I believe it used to be known as Call Park.
Okay.
It was purchased from the school district many years ago, and then referred to as Call Park, and I think it was the Optimus stepped forward with some money to put in a playground, and then just kept going.
Yep.
Okay. And I believe the Kiwanis Park was very similar to that same scenario, that they contributed a lot of money for playground, tennis courts and stuff years ago. Just a little bit of a back history. Probably 15 years ago, maybe even more than that, Webster Park was changed to PH, Webster Park Sports Complex. And the reason for that change is Mr. Ed Martin and family spent a lot of money for ball field lighting, redoing the infields, recreated an area and created the football field, and then wanted to incorporate his father's name as a recognition. But in order to do that, we wanted to make sure we kept Webster Park within that same name. So that's kind of a little bit of the history. It was to honor Ball. How Webster Park was created, I'm not sure. I'm assuming it has to do with Webster Street and mm-hmm. Webster School. But just to integrate what Mr. Barton and his family did.
So the PH were his father's initials?
Correct.
Okay.
And just one more quick one was the contributions that Dick Resch gave to the village.
Just going
to
ask about
Resch
that.
Family East River Trail.
And is that in perpetuity, or did we agree for a set amount it would be under someone?
I think that was in about 1989 or sooner. Was the original donation from Mr. Resch.
Yep.
And it has just stayed in that name since. He has again since contributed another about 800 and some thousand for the trail.
Okay.
But as well as the village.
Okay. I don't know that you're looking for a motion as much as, based on the comments, based on feedback that you would then make changes to and bring it back, or?
Sure, yeah, I could do that. I could make things, update that, and bring it back to a future meeting.
Okay. Does anyone else have feedback on grandfathering or anything like that?
Yeah, because I've seen these before, but I've been part of a lot of fundraising and naming for the university, whether it was Mack Hall or Crest Center, there's 100 different things named. And this looks really good, covers a lot of area, but also I think leaves it flexible enough. And when you get into maybe the opportunity to come to rename something, you just handle it right. You go, if Optimus Park, you do the history and you find out, or if a family's name, you say, hey, we've got somebody lined up who wants to do something at this park that's just going to reform it, and you know, we're considering a name change, we don't want to offend you, you know, you do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And if they're such big supporters of Alloway and they're so proud, you know, they would be happy. Green Bay had Admiral Flatley Park and made a big deal probably in the early 1970s, and they ended up bulldozing that, but they moved Admiral Flatley and the statue somewhere else and did a nice ceremony, you know, to honor him again. So the only other observation I would have is on, I was pretty impressed on the pretty substantial amounts you put out there as a suggested donor level, because I think a lot of times people sell these things too cheap, which was always a pet peeve of mine, because maybe the village taxpayers have $1 million in developing this park, and somebody swoops in with a $5,000 gift, and you know, their name is huge, or it's P.H. Martin Park, and somebody donates a $3,000 swing set, and their signage is bigger. So I'm sure you guys, you know, weigh all that kind of stuff. As far as the cost levels, I think I heard Chris say that those are negotiable.
Yes, that is correct. These would be starting points.
You know, if some kind of a pedestrian bridge might cost $500,000 or $1 million, and if somebody came and said, hey, I'll do half of that, you'd jump on that in a second, or we would, I think.
You mean the front half.
So, no, I thought great job from what I know about that kind of stuff.
In speaking about the funding, if people pay $100,000 for an athletic field, who gets that revenue?
Depending on the situation, I guess, of how it was obtained. You know, if we're working through a sport organization and we're trying to, you know, develop that, or if it's through a reconstruction of that field for a certain purpose, you know, portion may go to the sport organization for, you know, development and helping the village develop, or to the village itself, you know, for that specific purpose.
Yeah. I would think as long as we're in partnership with the sports organization, it's owned by the village, the property.
Yeah.
I would think that the donation would need to be made to the village for the benefit of that purpose, right? Which ultimately supports what the organization is trying to do.
Yeah.
Right. Does anyone have another opinion on that?
Just a comment. I was over in Ashwaubenon earlier today and hadn't noticed, but on top of their relatively new high school field house, it says Ashwaubenon High School Field House, Capital Credit Union, whatever, and pretty bold letters up there, so obviously, they're paying a pretty good price to have their name on that. So there are opportunities.
That's a good point. If you go to a lot of the high schools now, there's a lot of naming rights on athletic fields and different structures, you know, as a revenue-generating option.
We have a lot of room right down here.
Right in the
curtain. That would be a banner, and they go for approximately
$5,000, if I read it correctly.
For 7 years.
But I would caution against, I think, the lead on any fundraising, even though the organization may come to us and say, we want to go raise money, that's great. Mm-hmm. But I think from a financial perspective, the lead would need to be the village, I would think. Because otherwise you may have people out there just doing their own thing and going out raising money and then us feeling an obligation to do something that wasn't planned or something like that. Any other comments?
Just one. As being part of this committee in working on this, I don't want to take any credit for what Chris has done. I just want to compliment and point out the work that Chris has put into this, because this is something that really the village hasn't had before. Right. And as we grow, these type of things are important. And I salute Chris for being proactive and in bringing it to the committee. And then advancing it to the board, making these changes, and then bringing it back again. Thank you.
Thank you for coming to the village board and not asking for money.
Trying to get you money.
No, I would second that. Nice job. Any other comments on that? So you have what you need, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Action item number 9, temporary sponsorship signage in the village parks policy. This is something also that you've been talking about for a while.
Correct. This is a similar thing, but a little bit different, too. A few years back, we were looking at the possibility of, you know, finding a way for revenue generation for the village or sport organizations in particular. You see it a lot at, you know, baseball, softball diamonds, different places like that where, you know, they'll put banners up, mm-hmm. advertising banners, you know, for an annual fee. And, you know, looking at ways that we can, you know, try to find new ways to try to find revenues. A few years ago, I worked with Trevor on, he was working on the sign code. And so we did some revisions that allowed for off-site advertising signs like this, that, you know, to be able to put them up in parks. And part of that change in the code required that we, you know, create some guidelines so that we have a consistent product out there. We don't, you know, it's not different all over the board. So So this was the draft policy, you know, that I put together with regards to that stipulation in the ordinance, so that we would, you know, have those guidelines for that temporary signage. This type of signage, like I said, is more of a banner that would be hung on a fence that's seasonal, not up all year round, only up during the, say, the softball season or the baseball season, but could be, you know, a multi-year type of a situation where, you know, work out an agreement where, you know, could be a five-year annual contribution of X amount of dollars for that type of a signage. So.
Trustee Harris.
I just had one item possibly to add, and I don't know if it would be understood or not, or if we should put it in there, had to do with the cost of the creation of the signage or banner should be the responsibility of the sponsor.
Trustee Green.
And I just had a comment on number 8, and this may have been in the intent of the language, but I'm just very sensitive to it. It says tobacco products. We have tobacco and related products, and what we're going after there is the vaping. They'll do one of their,
yep.
Oh, I have a great vaping, and we'll put that on there with no nicotine on it. No, no way. I mean, that is such a bridge, and we're finding more teenagers now vaping nicotine than we're finding smoking nicotine. So I don't want to see a loophole there with, you know, the next delivery mechanism where then putting that in. So for your consideration.
Any other questions? I have one. How about the revenue? Who sells those banners and who gets the revenue from them?
Our original thought was that we would work with the sport organizations to do the legwork on this.
Mm-hmm.
That they could go out and talk to the businesses and seek that as an offset to our sport field use agreements that we work with our organizations on, or for capital, you know, improvements, again, very similar. So.
So it's primarily for capital improvements of the facility.
Correct.
So if they went out and promoted that, who's the check written to? I think we need to get that thought.
Okay.
Once again, if it's for the facility itself,
sure. It
might as well come to us as a generous gift through the organization.
Okay.
But I will leave that up to our attorneys and accountants. But if it's for the explicit purpose of improving the facilities, if it's to raise funds for equipment that is owned by sports clubs, then that's a different matter. So I guess it, where are the revenues going, and if they are, they should be, we should work in concert with them to figure that out ahead of time. Because we could have people, not that we would, but we could have people going out and selling $5,000 banners and putting it in the coffers of an organization with no plan. And as long as there's a plan and a good plan, that's fine. That's only my opinion. So, are you looking for a motion on this item?
I'll do the same as the previous one.
Good idea.
I'll update it and I'll bring it back.
Great, thank you. That's good, seeing that it refers to the previous item. Action item number 10, action regarding 2018 Plan Commission Annual Report. Mr. Fuller.
All right, so every year the Plan Commission does an annual report. They list different tasks that they did, different approvals they went through, and different accomplishments and future accomplishments they want to look forward to the next year. So what I've included tonight in the agenda packet is pages 4 and 5 from 2017, annual report, which show the Plan Commission assigned tasks for 2018, the recommended initiatives, future tasks and initiatives, and opportunities to improve. This was brought to the Planning Commission in December, and similar to last year, they wanted to first receive comment and direction from the Village Board. Is there certain tasks or projects that you want them to be focusing their energies on in 2018 and beyond? Otherwise, I think traditionally how it happens, this remains relatively unchanged. So if there's particular projects, if Penny was here, she would say that some of the discussion at the Planning Commission revolved around access to the Fox River Trail. So that was brought up that maybe that's a project the Planning Commission take a look at, is are there ways that we can improve access to the Fox River Trail? But otherwise, they were pretty open to any direction from the Village Board.
Okay. Trustee Harris.
I didn't know, not necessarily, well, sort of a 2019 item, but just like we have a capital improvement plan, a Park and Rec has a five-year plan, streets, we have a five-year plan, just to provide guidance. It's nothing that we, you know, it's not set in stone that we have to do, but it gives us the path, sort of like we did, and part of it is because we did the streetscape thing, because we did the corridor study. Maybe it would be beneficial to have a three-year or a five-year plan with the Planning Commission of what they foresee, just, again, to provide more guidance of the direction that we want to take the village.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Other trustees? I really liked 3D, which was engage committees of the village board to consider programs of common concern. I don't know that we do that much, or if there's has been an opportunity for that, but I would encourage that. I think that fits very well into the whole planning purview. And I would also suggest we think about, and I don't know if this is done or not, but to collaborate with other area planning commissions around the Brown County area, so that together we look at, to Trustee Harris's point, what are we all looking to do? How do we come together and make a better, greater Green Bay? And I think that might be an opportunity. And that's it for me. Anyone else? Okay. You have what you need?
Yes. And this will be coming back, obviously, in final form.
Great. Well, thank the Planning Commission for us.
Can I come?
I have a request from the floor to suspend the rules.
Motion to suspend the rules to public comment.
Okay, we have a second. Trustee Harris, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Motion nay.
Passes. Nay.
I am opposed.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm the former co-chairman of the Village of Alloway Bike Bed Committee. Matthew's suggestion that the Planning Commission have a regular update is a right on point. We used to have a five-year update to the 20-year comprehensive plan, but that was not done this time around. And what happened was is that the Parks Committee report didn't make it into the comprehensive plan, which is the overall guiding document for the village. It's not set in stone, but it's a guiding document. So it's my suggestion that the village does a five-year update to the comprehensive plan, even though it's not required by law. I think it's every 10 years. But that was the process before, and any official reports by any of the committees that are adopted by the board should be added on as an addendum to the comprehensive plan. That's what happened with the corridor study, and then it makes it so that people can rely on what's going on. It's what should have happened with the Parks and Rec committee, and that report was going to be added to the comprehensive plan, but they decided not to update the comprehensive plan this year. And so it never made it into the official village documents as part of the overall plan for the village. So Matthew was absolutely right. It should be updated, and then the plan should be added. The plan of the various committees, once they're adopted by the board, should be added to the comprehensive plan so people can count on what's going to happen in the future. Thanks.
Thank you. Do I have a motion to pick up the rules? Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Genrich.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Okay. Action item number 10A, action regarding the approval of Doty School STRS State Municipal Agreement. Sean.
The Village of Alloway has received a DOT Transportation Alternative Program grant to construct the Doty Safe Route to School project. The project is funded with 80% federal funding up to a maximum of $468,424. The Village will be responsible for 20% of the grant eligible costs and any expenditures over the federal funding maximum and non-participating funded project costs. Non-funded expenditures include right-of-way acquisition, bidding, pre-construction site modifications, and construction engineering. The village overall cost for the project is estimated at $200,000. The state municipal agreement was provided to you in your packet. Are there any questions?
Have we or will we, when received the federal dollar?
When the construction starts.
So well, that's already been received, 100% of
it? Well, this does include, the federal funding does include design. As I'm sure that as the design is completed, we can submit a reimbursement request to the DOT.
Okay.
That's what we did for construction on the Webster Elementary Safe Route to School project. As we had gotten invoices from the contractors, as we paid them, then we were eligible to submit a reimbursement to the DOT.
So it has been approved to the point where we have a Fed authorization ID?
Yes.
Okay. Other questions?
Sponsorship opportunities.
Sponsorship opportunity. Name walk, sidewalk naming opportunity. That would have to be permanent. So it looks like we have about $83,000 in non-funded costs because our project funds are 117. You said the expected total cost to the village is 200.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, so that's in the design and engineering and construction.
Right. And again, those will include right-of-way acquisition, bidding, pre-construction site modifications, and construction engineering. Well, on top of the $117,000, another $80,000.
Okay. So that comes out to about $22 a square foot for the. It's about a mile, right? Worth of
yes.
Sidewalk?
Yeah. Roughly speaking, 1,500 feet along Longview Avenue and 3,900 feet along East River Drive.
Okay. And do you think that's a strong estimate? Do you think we're overestimating? Do you think it's going to come in under?
I did look at the numbers. I had compared the estimate that Craig had put together
yeah.
and compared it to the actual cost of the Webster
Good. So we are looking for a motion to approve. Do I have a motion to that effect? Trustee Harris.
Okay.
Do I have a second? Trustee Sampson, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, sir. So for those in the audience, that'll be a sidewalk along Longview from Doty School to East River, from, and then along East River from LeBron all the way up to Hoffman. So we'll have a big loop, lots of connections to Doty School and to the area. Action item number 11, we'll take them as one. Consent agenda. Do I have a motion for this item? Trustee Sampson. What's your motion, sir?
To accept the consent agenda.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Green. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 12, summary of facade improvement program from Mr. Fuller. Good night, Mike. Good night, John. Thanks for coming.
So just a quick summary. I threw together all the 14 projects that we've had go through this program. Since I've been here, and I believe when I started, we received the first one. This program is funded through the Tax and Incremental Finance District, so it only includes commercial properties typically within that district, or it can go within a half-mile radius south side of it. There's a 50% match to any facade improvements, up to $10,000. And then a loan portion to it as well, up to $7,500 for select items and select projects. So if I can make that a little bigger, as you can see, 2016 we really had quite a few projects come through. 2015-16. And then past year and a half, it's kind of tapered off. Not exactly sure of the reason. We've kind of been marketing it the same. I just don't know if everyone who's wanted to do a project did a project. I'm not entirely sure. I can try and investigate that a little further. It was this type of the information that the board was looking for. More information?
No, when I brought it up just to get a better understanding, I thought it would be somewhere in the teens, but did, in terms of number of projects, didn't recall each of them that had come through. So this just is a nice refresher. Thank you.
If you just point out here too, I guess 2016 Bellin came forward and they had three different projects on two different locations. Two of those projects never got completed. So, we do have that one loan that's being paid for currently, and they make monthly payments to the village. And then we had a project that was approved in 17 that was never, it was completed, but it was never, the receipt was never turned in, it was never paid out. So.
So we didn't pay for it.
Right.
And that was Riviera?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Any questions for Trevor? Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Item number 13, report on sale of 3241 to 3245 Riverside Drive.
The Old Town and Country property. The east side of Riverside Drive is officially sold. Karen Clausen is the new owner. Trevor has been in contact by the architect, so they are working on putting together the plans, which will be coming forth hopefully in the next couple months.
Very exciting.
Yes.
Very exciting. And for those of you who didn't know, just on the Zambaldi project, they broke ground, or they're breaking ground soon. We had the groundbreaking ceremony. But I know they're planning to get going, so that's great. Any future agenda items? Number 14. Hearing none, I will accept the motion to convene in the closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 1985-1E, deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, specifically a developer's agreement for 2050 Riverside Drive. Do I have a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Trustee Harris. Any discussion? Roll call. Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Genrich.
Aye.
President. Trustee Atwood. You lean back.
Aye.
President Rafter. Aye. Trustee Green.
Aye.
Trustee Sampson.
Aye.
We are enclosed. Thank you.